You know, they say if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And we didn't work on Labor Day because we hate this podcast. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will catch you up on some things that happened over the weekend, update you on the various races around the Major League Baseball, and of course, the White Sox keep losing. What a surprise. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows Aaron Judge really isn't that tall. It's all in your head, an optical illusion. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman. You know who's really tall? Jose Altuve, tall of heart.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you want to have a conversation about Aaron Judge and whether he's actually, man, yeah, is it easier to argue that he's overrated in terms of talent or overrated in terms of height? Probably overrated in terms of height.
Yeah, because he bangs.
I think that's actually a fair assessment, but we are not going to talk about Aaron Judge's height too much on this podcast, although I think we will talk about the Yankees. He hasn't homered in 7 games at the time of this Tuesday morning recording, which is nearing a season-high homerless drought. So are we worried about him? I guess we can talk about that. Sure, we have a lot to get to, Jake. It's Tuesday. It's Tuesday. We're recording on a Tuesday.
His homeless drought is 7 games. What's yours?
So much more. You know, I tried to end it during that softball game that we played during your bachelor party. Although, granted, I haven't played very many games really at all. So that's like, I guess, 3 games during that softball extravaganza. Okay. So that's 3 games. So I guess it's maybe not. I don't remember the game I played before that, but I also probably didn't homer during that one either.
The listeners are starting to get worried. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com if you're concerned about Jordan's lack of home run production. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we're going to talk a little bit about the weekend, spin it a little bit more forward than usual because we did not record on Labor Day because it is a holiday and we observe those.
Sometimes.
So let's start with the American League because we're Americans who red-blooded Americans. That's us. And we will talk about a mop that happened over the weekend because its relevance continues. The Kansas City Royals, who were like 7 to 8 outs away from mopping the Guardians last week. There were articles abound, including one from you. Mine truly? I don't know.
Jordan truly, you could say.
Jordan truly, about how the Royals were here. They were formidable. Since that day, they have lost 6 games in a row. They were mopped by the Astros. They lost last night to Cleveland. And even worse than that was they lost Vinny Pasquantino in one of those games over the weekend against Houston to a broken thumb on a freak play, bang, bang, at first base. The Houston Astros just carved the Royals up. In all 4 games, Houston starters allowed 1 run, 1 earned run in the series. That is tough to win.
Now, obviously, any mop is going to feel a lot better or worse for one team than the other. Do you want to start with Kansas City or do you want to start with Houston? Because I have some strong feelings about both.
Let's do Houston.
Okay. So let's start with that nugget that you just dropped there. Right. Now, I know they lost yesterday in Cincinnati, and we'll fold in the Monday results to our general weekend recap. That's how we're going to do this episode. We'll do the AL first, then we'll take a break, do the NL, and then we'll hit some quick hits at the end. The Astros pitching becoming a legitimate strength after how much of a mess it was in the first, not just the first month, right? Like, even when they started winning in May and into June, we were still looking at this rotation like besides Ronel Blanco, who was, you know, throwing no hitters every 5 days, it was just like Fromber was not very good. Verlander was out. The rookies, Hunter Brown was an atrocity. Eric Geddy was getting blasted. Like, all of these guys. I mean, at that point, they'd called up Jake Bloss. Like, they'd call up all these guys. And it was just like, and the bullpen wasn't good, right? Like, Hader and Presley was injured in a mess. And Abreu was giving up runs. It was just like, okay, even if this offense starts playing like the Astros, this is, they will have to be overcoming their own pitching staff. You know, maybe the bullpen we would expect to regress back to being good, and that's generally happened. But now, I mean, now it's like they feel great about all these guys to the point where, partially because of workload, but partially because of how well everyone else is throwing, they're like, yeah, Renel Blanco, yeah, probably not going to start a postseason game. That's an astonishing turnaround, because with Renel Blanco was all we could count on for the first 2 months, and now he's borderline expendable for them, which is really a credit to the development of guys like Brown, the turnaround guys like Brown, who we've seen over in the big leagues, you know, kind of be able to make those adjustments. And then Arrigetti, who's been spectacular, and then Verlander obviously fits into that in a very interesting way as well.
And they've needed it because the offense is freaking banged up, dude. Like, Alex Bregman hasn't played it in a couple days. He's got an elbow issue. Kyle Tucker still hasn't come back. That's hopefully coming soon for them. But they ran out an outfield yesterday in Cincinnati of Ben Gamel, Chaz McCormick in center, who they sent down like 3 days before that, and then Jason Hayward in right field. So this Astros lineup, when they play the team that you care about, you're going to look at it and you're going to be like, that's really not that good. And then you're going to see Spencer Arrigetti, who you've never heard of before. And then it's the seventh inning and there are no runs for your team.
Yes. However, one other name that I forgot to mention, which is very important to this. Well, two other names that have to be mentioned when we're talking about Houston. One is Yusei Kikuchi. They give up three prospects who are all close or at the major league level to Toronto for Yusei Kikuchi, the rental. And we say, what are you doing? You know, okay, it's good. You went and got a pitcher that you clearly needed. I mean, no one doubted that the Astros needed a starting pitcher. So in that sense, and we even said at the time, like, okay, this is a pretty hefty price to pay for Kikuchi. But I mean, man, like, how good is Yusei Kikuchi? Well, it turns out pretty freaking good, especially once he starts throwing his slider 35% of the time instead of 20% of the time. He has been fantastic, and now you have a lot of confidence in a guy like him to start a postseason game. But then the other one, which, hello, duh, is Yordan Alvarez, who has once again quietly, I believe, has the second highest OPS in baseball over the last 2 months behind Aaron Judge. And it's just been ho-hum. I mean, he's settled into just that, like, So because what he's doing is never quite like historic. He's just been at this exact level basically now for four years that it's just like, yeah, that's Yordan, of course. And because no one wants to like go out of their way to like be excited about the Astros, which is totally fair, Yordan just kind of ends up being collateral damage and not getting the love that he absolutely deserves. And he's still one of the best hitters on earth. And while the rest of this offense has been either injured or struggling, he just keeps on keeping on.
I was in the press box last week when he hit three homers in that game against Philly, and I'm like mid conversation with someone and he hits the third home run and everyone just starts laughing, right? It's just his home runs. That is a ridiculous thing for a human being to accomplish. But the Astros look better on the mound than they have all year. They have six players that you could legitimately start in a postseason game. The real interesting conversation, I actually want to save this for tomorrow, is should Justin Verlander start a postseason game? My opinion, the answer right now is no. He was shaky again yesterday in his third start off the IL. Don't want to dig into it too deep. Let's table that for tomorrow. The Kansas City Royals, however, they are riding the struggle bus. We have six losses in a row for them. They, right before the waiver wire deadline, were incredibly active, bringing in Robbie Grossman, Tommy Pham, and Yuli Gurriel, who's already hurt.
Well, because he is 40.
He's 40.
Yeah. So, like, respectfully, like, the random hamstring tightness in your first game, like,
yeah,
dude. Kind of the thing that then happens sometimes when you're trying to play 40-year-old players. But that was a last-ditch effort to, you know, backfill this devastating injury to Vinny Pasquantino, the broken thumb that at the very least is going to keep Vinny out for the remainder of the regular season. I appreciate Vinny very understandably being like, my season's not over, I'm going to try to come back. I mean, the timeline they give this 6 to 8 weeks, that pushes it to, you know, the middle of October. Are the Royals still playing then? Who knows?
Hell yeah.
The point is, right, we hope so. But, you know, it's good to, I'm not surprised that they went out. I mean, it's probably likely they were going to claim at least one of these guys anyway, but because there are clearly still some holes in this offense. But that's the thing. I mean, they could afford to have a bad weekend in Houston. I'm not sure they can afford to lose Vinny at this stage.
So here's the deal with the Royals. They're still 4.5 games up on that last wild card.
Yeah.
The bottom has fallen out here for them. But the worst case scenario is them just falling ass backwards into October. I can't really see the Red Sox chasing them down to get into the playoffs. And then once you're in, you're in. And that if you're the sixth seed, right, and you're still only a game back of the Twins, if you're the sixth seed, your first game is either going to be against the Astros or the Guardians, right? Almost certainly. And right. Like you have Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo have been really good, and Bobby Witt Jr. Can just like win a game for you. So it's to me, the sky is not falling in Kansas City, even though they have lost 6 games in a row. So that was that big series that happened over the weekend between those two teams. I don't want to linger on the Mariners. They lost the series to the Angels in just embarrassing fashion. Mickey Moniak, friend of the show, walk-off home run on Sunday. Mariners lose again yesterday in Oakland in their final series ever at the Coliseum. Also a walk-off. I think that let's bury the Mariners tomorrow. They are
hey,
6
games. I'm wearing my Aqua Sox hat for a reason, all right? Focus on it's the about future.
The Mariners are 6 games back in the division. Time is slipping away. I have zero faith that this group can pull themselves out of this rut they created for themselves.
More reason for Kansas City to feel fine about the teams that are quote-unquote like, chasing them.
No one's chasing you, dude. Like, don't be paranoid. You're not playing well, Kansas City, but there's no one behind you. Let's zip over to the American League East for a second, where the Yankees dropped 2 consecutive series last week against subpar National League teams, losing 2 out of 3 in D.C. before losing 2 out of 3 at home to the Cardinals. Messy ball games on Saturday and Sunday for the Yankees. They were down 7-2 to St. Louis, came back, tied at 7, and then lost 14-7. The bullpen has not been good. Bad starts from Will Warren on Saturday and Nestor Cortez on Sunday. Thankfully for the Yankees, it does appear that Clark Schmidt and Luis Hill are coming back soon. That will give them 6 starters, which is too many.
6 starters in name. I mean, they are in the situation. I know Cole left with like a leg cramp last night.
He said he wasn't
worried. Not worried. But the point is, Cole has generally started to look more like himself recently. I mean, we haven't really had any like vintage, like, oh my God, that's one of the best pitchers on earth performances. But like, he's throwing hard and he's going deep into games and he's generally not allowing a lot of runs. Beyond him, I feel like we're just rolling the dice with all of these guys every time they go out there. And so we'll talk more about, you know, playoff rotations later this week. But that's I sure they have 6 starters, but I don't really know what I'm getting from any of them right now.
Let's check in on Aaron Judge home run watch. So you mentioned earlier that he has not homered in 7 games. And we joke that that is a concerning dip in production. However, if you are trying to break your own record of most home runs in a season in the American League, you kind of have to just keep on hitting them all the time. He is currently at 51. We have a month left to go, less than a month, and he needs 12 more home runs. It's going to be close now.
Yeah. Now, again, I think the interesting thing with Judge and this push for some kind of history is different than 2 years ago, because 2 years ago, the Yankees were cruising. The Yankees were up by multiple games, certainly by the second half of the month. I know the Rays made it sort of interesting at one point, but it was like the only thing we were talking about was, can Aaron Judge hit a home run tonight? You know, the Yankees were going to win the division. They weren't worried about that. Whereas now, when he hits a home run in a big spot, it's like, oh my God, he just hit his 50th home run. And also the Yankees just took a 1-game lead in the division. That's even more, carries more weight. And then when he goes over 5 with 3 strikeouts, you're like, oh God, he didn't homer. And also the Orioles just passed us. And so that dynamic, I think, is going to create a very interesting last few weeks, regardless of whether he ends up with 52 or 62 or 72 home runs.
I think that he is going to take his walks.
Yeah,
he always will. Right. And he has never been the type of player to press.
Yeah. Especially now they got some guys behind him. Right. I still don't really know what to count on with Rizzo, like whatsoever. I know he had an RBI double last night, which was good to see. But even just Stanton and the way Jazz is swinging it and our guy, Austin Wells, who, you know, we've been high on all season, like there's enough now going on behind him. I understand Yankees fans are furious about this Verdugo situation, but I think that'll get resolved one way or another in the next couple weeks, and that he's batting ninth, right? So that's it is what it is. And I think otherwise, I feel really good about the Yankees offense, which I guess is maybe not a hot take, but I think that part of it is because Judge shouldn't feel as much pressure now.
Let's briefly talk about the Verdugo thing. So for those of you who are not completely immersed in Yankee land, Alex Verdugo has been their left fielder all year. He has been very bad and disappointing. He is maybe a fine defender, but bad base runner, bad hitter, and he's playing left field almost every day. Jason Dominguez is one of the top prospects in baseball, certainly in their system, and he is in AAA playing very well. He debuted last year and then had Thomas Johnson surgery. And then the question just becomes, why are you not having him play in the big leagues every day? I think it's a weird move for the Yankees to just not give him the reins. I guess the issue is, if he's bad and you have to go back to Verdugo, you just kicked Verdugo under the curb and like you can't like pivot again. It's weird. It's very weird. I get that they want to give Dominguez every day at bats, in that maybe come October, the fact that he has spent every day playing might benefit him. They can always pivot to Dominguez on September 14th, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, to me, it's like, yeah, I totally get the point where it's like they're not fielding their best team right now. I think that's probably true. I don't think, I feel this way about basically every prospect call up, which is that none of them are guaranteed to just be awesome. Now, I know the floor for Verdugo is so low right now that it seems easy to think that Dominguez can clear it. And I think I believe that too. But at the same time, it's not you don't just press the button and get whatever numbers Dominguez is putting up in AAA. Like, that's just not how it works. So, but it is bizarre. It really still smells more like loyalty to Verdugo more than not believing in Dominguez, which that is stunning to me, I would say, at this point, considering Verdugo's a free agent at the end of this year.
The Yankees remain a half game up over the Baltimore Orioles, who thankfully took 2 out of 3 against the Rockies in Colorado and then smushed the White Sox yesterday on Labor Day. I want to talk a little bit more about that later when we do nuclear overreaction. But this thing stays close and compelling, and the Orioles getting to play Chicago this week will benefit them. The White Sox have lost 11 in a row. Quickly, let's swing back to the NL Central. Guardians took 2 out of 3 over the weekend against Pittsburgh. You were at some of those games. You met our friend Sax Boy in person.
I did. Sax Boy, the Pirates fan. Yes, former guest and our favorite Pirates fan, Sax Boy Billy, one of the great social media additions to our lives. Met him sitting up in the cheap seats in Cleveland for Pittsburgh's win on Saturday, where Luis Ortiz looked awesome. But the Guardians offense is starting to kind of come to life. They've got the veteran help in the rotation with Boyd and Cobb. I know you can roll your eyes at that, but like, they needed something, and those guys have been exactly what you wanted. More importantly, Josh Naylor's starting to look more like himself, his first half self. They call up Kyle Manzardo, who hit 2 home runs in his first game back as part of September call-up. Again, I'm not asking for this Guardians lineup to start, you know, leading the league in home runs. We just need a little bit more spice. Jose Ramirez going 40-40, can't do it by himself, but he sure is trying. And so the fact that they were able to take that series, bounce back on Sunday with a big win, and then go into Kansas City on Monday and start to exact some of the revenge for what happened last week in Cleveland was a really encouraging sign. I know Minnesota won a series over the weekend and they beat Tampa Bay last night, so maybe this is when Minnesota surges with Kansas City faltering. But I feel pretty good about where Cleveland's at right now.
Let's talk about the Twins a little bit more tomorrow. I think they're lying in the grass a little bit. I'm pretty interested. And if I was an American League team, I'd be a little worried about the Twins. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will do the National League. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. The Phillies, they played the Braves over the weekend. And these are games. They're so good, dude. The Phillies Braves games are so entertaining. It's crazy.
Yeah, these have been pretty much consistently just regular season. Of course, the postseason is part of the context, But at the same time, I mean, these just the characters involved, and especially now that we're adding new characters to the mix, that's one of the most fun things about kind of the ongoing rivalries like this, is being able to insert new ones, which now, especially with how injured the Braves have been, we're seemingly getting them every time they play. There's like another new Brave that's either on the mound or somehow in the starting lineup and either making horrible mistakes or making huge plays and getting five hits. Like, this is so many interesting just rotating pieces with the Braves, whereas the Phillies, I mean, they haven't changed an ounce for over the last 3 years.
So two things. One is Whit Merrifield becoming a main character in the Phillies Braves rivalry is hilarious.
Yes.
And then the other is Carlos Estevez, who this is his first time pitching in this type of atmosphere after, remember, he was on the Angels and the Rockies. Okay. Now, I think he may have been on a competitive Rockies team back in the year 25 AD, but still.
No, I think, yeah. But the point,
this is not someone who pitched, was.
he pitched in. Again, it's wild that like the Rockies made the postseason more recently than multiple other major league teams. Okay. He pitched in the 2017 wild card game against
the Archie Bradley triple game.
The Archie Bradley triple game. He pitched and allowed a run in that. Did he allow the triple to Archie Bradley? Sorry, I'm going to look at this anyway. Sorry. Continue.
My point is, this is not somebody who was pitched in like legitimate high leverage situations. And for him to go out there on Sunday in that 11-inning game and get two scoreless innings in relief in extras, right? Throwing a scoreless top of the 10th and top of the 11th with the runner starting on second is very hard to do. And it was cool to see him feed off that energy. But the Phillies take 3 out of 4 from the Braves. I would say the three main characters in this edition of the rivalry was Nick Castellanos, who is absurdly locked in right now. He is swinging at everything still. And for whatever reason, Grant Holmes, Braves reliever, just kept throwing him fastballs. Hits a go-ahead two-run home run in the first game on Thursday. And then in the biggest spot, Sunday night, Braves have a chance to take it to 12 and even the series up. 1-2 fastball up in the zone. Castellanos single up the middle, game over. Casty, when he's going good, is just an utter delight. And the Phillies certainly hope he can carry it into October. Second main character that's worth introducing, Spencer Schwellenbach. Please talk about him.
Mm-hmm. This is someone that I feel like we really did not. Again, there are a lot of call-ups now that we just don't have enough time to like spend 20 minutes on. But this is clearly proving to be one we should have spent more on because, listen, we're 16 starts into the Spencer Schwellenbach experience. And while the ERA is, you know, 3.69 doesn't necessarily jump off the page. You know, the FIP is closer to 3. He's got, you know, more than a strikeout per inning. He's throwing a ton of strikes. And if you like, you know, bright red baseball savant pages, holy crap. Like, you take a look at his underlying metrics and you realize how much Spencer Schwellenbach, a former two-way player at Nebraska, is doing well. And this is just one of those great examples. And I mean, the Braves have obviously had a lot of success, you know, developing pitching, but this is someone who was the shortstop and closer in college. And, you know, it was one of those ones where it's like, man, he could probably do both. He could probably develop as like a third or fourth round infielder, but they saw the upside on the mound because you hadn't seen that much of it on the mound. And while he did, I believe, get TJ pretty much right after he signed, once he came back and was a full-time pitcher and developing as a starting pitcher, it just came together really, really, really quickly. But what's so amazing is the strikeouts that are coming right now. I mean, he was not striking out that many guys in the minors, and he's just dominating.
What he has done is legitimately remarkable because of how he's doing it. Let me explain. So, gets drafted, gets Tommy John, does not throw a pitch in the minor leagues until 2023, okay? He is not racking up outs with fastball slider, two pitch pitcher, whatever.
The opposite,
he has a legitimate 6-pitch mix. He's throwing 6 different pitches, and he has gotten to that point with less than a year of minor league development. Okay. I don't know how many pitches he was throwing at college, but I can't imagine as a closer, it was more than three.
You don't have time. You don't have time to throw six pitches. I know, like, I guess Raisel Iglesias throws like four or five, but in general, yeah, no, that's exactly it. It's amazing that he's been able to develop so many pitches that he feels good about, because normally when you're taking like the raw project type guy, it takes a while for it all to come together. And instead, it's like, it's the opposite. I mean, I don't even really know what, I guess you could look at what his best pitch is by run value, but the fact that he feels comfortable throwing all these is astounding.
And that is part of why the Braves should be so frustrated and disappointed leaving Philadelphia, because they had a chance to, frankly, win all four of these games. They were up 4-0 in the first one. They win the second one. Friend of the show, Orlando Arcia, two home run game in Philadelphia. Dominant performance from him. Saturday, it's just Zach Wheeler shoving it, but Max Fried was very good, just allowed a couple solo shots. And then on Sunday, Schwellenbach makes one mistake. He's like literally just one mistake to Nick Castellanos on a curveball that kind of backs up on the inside half. Big swing from Cassie, and that's really the game. Like, the Braves, I feel comfortable saying, done and dusted. This division is going to be long to the Phillies, and the Braves are now only a half game up on a playoff spot above the Mets. Yeah. That's wild.
Yes. Maybe we should just do the Mets right now, especially after they won last night. So they beat the Red Sox last night. The Mets, Red Sox, I've been comparing them all season. This is already an opportunity for the Mets to start separating themselves from that conversation, as they are obviously much closer to a postseason spot. Boston has work to do before we take them seriously again. But here come the Mets, and you know, I saw some Mets fans like Jolly Olive, you know, tweeting like, oh, you know, I can't believe the Mets actually, you know, took care of business this weekend. Well, it's like, guess what? You're facing probably the worst team of all time, so you better sweep them. There's really no excuse not to sweep the White Sox at this point. I truly believe that. And so they did it. And now here they are. Like, that's what you have to do if you want to be in real position to. And they absolutely took that beyond to care of business. They look great. They dominated. And now they continue that momentum, taking the game against Boston. And when you look at what's gone right with the Mets recently, I mean, the offense has been good the whole season, right? We know Francisco Lindor is an MVP candidate. But now that you have Pete swinging it well, you have Winker swinging it well, you have McNeil has been hitting really well recently. I know, you know, JD Martinez just went on the paternity list, so he'll be out for a little bit. They're getting nothing from Francisco Alvarez. He had that massive home run against the Orioles. Other than that, he has done basically nothing for the last 6 weeks, and this offense is still really good. But they've settled into three starters that are generally performing. Manaea, Peterson, and Severino have been, again, I'm not like amped to be like, these guys are going to carry us in October, but they might be enough to get them there if the teams in front of them start to falter. So I'm excited to see what this Mets push looks like, although I'm a little bit worried it's going to end in some frustrating heartbreak in the final week.
It's setting up as a neutral. This is win-win stuff, dude.
For sure. For sure.
The Mets being in it is, whether they succeed or fail, is just better for the sport. Because you get to watch Mets fans watch the Mets, which is my favorite team, is watching Mets fans. Other stuff in the National League, and then we'll take a break. Dodgers, 3 out of 4 over the Diamondbacks. We theorized, hypothesized, could the Padres or Diamondbacks, you know, chase the Dodgers down and win the division? I was kind of in on that, and now I look like an idiot almost right away. Dodgers are going to run away with this, I think.
Yeah. Less, to me, it's a lot less about Arizona and San Diego, who I still feel pretty good about. The fact that Arizona should get Christian Walker and Ketel Marte back soon. The fact that their pitching is as healthy as it's been all season. The fact that the Padres just got Tatis back. All those things are good. The problem is that the Dodgers are also healthy now and getting healthier. Mm. And we're going to get Yamamoto back. And maybe you're going to get Glasnow back, although I won't believe that until I see it. The lineup right now is just, it's ridiculous. I mean, I think it's the best in the league. I don't feel like that's a hot take. And I think that's what we expected. So that's what they're going to be able to do. It is an absolute nightmare to deal with 1 through 9, or certainly 1 through 7. And that is going to be enough to, I think, power them to another division title.
The Dodgers have simultaneously underwhelmed and have the best record in the league.
Yeah, that should sum it up. And we'll see if the Brewers, and we'll talk about the Brewers here quickly. can make a push for the one seed. Philly's also going to be right there. I think the Dodgers are going to end up really, really pushing this to maybe another 100-win season, which it... Again, I know it didn't look like that we were going to have a 100-win season. It's still, it would still take a pretty strong finish, but I think there's a shot, but it's probably unlikely. They're running out of games. NL, let's do NL Central before we take a break. Brewers are cruising. I mean, this is about as safe of a division pick as we have in the whole league, and that's been true for a while now. They win again last night against the Cardinals after taking 3 of 4 in Cincinnati, almost mopping. They lose in extras on Sunday. And listen, they are remarkable. I think it is the most impressive season compared to expectations. That I mean, them versus Kansas City is close for that discussion, but for to be this dominant the whole season, to be this good at so many different things is both shocking, but also let's not underrate the talent that is playing ridiculously well right now. They have one of the 2 to 3 best catchers in the league. They have an ascendant superstar in Jackson Churio, who's been playing like one of the best players in baseball for 3 months. They have a shortstop in Willy Adames, who's going to make $200 million this winter, or you know, at least 150. I mean, you compare him to what Dansby did leading up to his free agency, and I'm taking Willie all day long. So I just think that they have elite talent. How they're doing it on the mound is a little bit perplexing, and yet the starting pitching ERA over the last couple of weeks has been excellent, and they have just enough. They're doing enough else well that they are one of the best teams in baseball. I don't feel bad saying that.
Quick rant. Mm-hmm. Tom Verducci, you're a legend, my diet. My good man, Sports Illustrated's Tom Verducci, you're familiar if you're listening to this. Tom wrote a good piece about the Brewers and how they've gotten here and how they have the third best record in baseball. If you control F the piece and you type in Adames, it'll come up once. And then if you control F Churio, it'll come up twice, barely. And it has big Moneyball not mentioning the rotation or Miguel Tejada energy. And
100%.
Right? It's like the Brewers, what they're doing on the margins is amazing, right? But like, it's easy to just be like, dude, Willy Adames is like one of the best shortstops in baseball, and Jackson Churio has been like the best hitter not named Aaron Judge for like 3 months.
But to that point, though, we should also give them credit for that.
Yeah, dude.
Give this front office credit for being like, yes, we need to give this child $80 million before he even plays a major league game. Yes, we need to trade for Willy Adames when they did. Yes, we need to somehow sneak in and get William Contreras in this trade, who's even better than Sean Murphy. Like, all of those things are incredible achievements, but let's not just use them as throwaway lines, because they are driving this bus. I mean, they are the stars that are the reason why they are able to win so much without Christian Yelich. So there are a lot of things on the margins that are happening, and we love Pat Murphy. All those things are true. But yeah, we should not be overlooking the star level talent that they have as well.
Adames Churio Contreras is very real.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is very, very, very real. Did you see the Willy Adames fun fact that blew my mind yesterday?
Yes, the home run king, dude.
Tied Ken Griffey Jr. in 1996 for most 3-run homers in a single season, with 13. And Griffey in that year had, I think, 49 total home runs, and Willie has 29. So that efficiency for 3-run home runs is astonishing.
If I'm the Brewers, here's a real question. If you're the Brewers, and you got bases loaded, nobody out, and Willy Adames is up, do you get picked off first base on purpose to set up a 3-run homer? Because you know he's better that way? That's something A-Rod would believe.
Or do you... Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's A-Rod would believe that.
I'm just playing 3D chess, that's all.
Last thing on the NL Central before we take a break is... Here come the Cubbies. Oh, and then you blow it against the Pirates on Monday. I was going to be really excited to do a lot more Cubs chat on this episode. And then Jorge Lopez gives up 2 homers late in the game on Monday, and we're a little bit less excited. Now, listen, the reason the Cubs are in this conversation now are because they have beat up on bad teams, which is what you need to do. They beat up on the Rockies, they beat up on the Marlins, they beat up on the Nats, and now they should be beating up on the Pirates at home. They dropped the series opener. They are still in the mix now. And as we mentioned, I think at the end of last week, They still have a very favorable schedule the rest of the way. They do have the Dodgers and Yankees coming up over the next week. If they can just hold steady in that one, they too can be relevant at the end of the season like the Mets. The key players to know for them, Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki have been awesome. They're really not getting much from Cody Bellinger. They're not getting much from the guy they traded for when they weirdly bought at the deadline with Isak Paredes. That's not happening, but enough else is going right offensively. I know Justin Steele got scratched today with elbow soreness. That's a little bit scary and kind of putting a damper on the vibes, but the Cubs have a path here to be relevant again over the last few weeks.
Third best record in baseball since the trade deadline now, behind only the Padres and the Diamondbacks. Let's take a break, and when we return, we'll laugh. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Bit of a shorter episode today because I need to go get my marriage license. No big deal. Congrats on the matrimony, bro. I would like to begin with a nuclear overreaction.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. The Baltimore Orioles are the team I think the most about. Okay. Natural. And yesterday I was watching the Orioles play the Chicago White Sox. And the experience of watching the team you care the most about play the Chicago White Sox in 2024 is a fascinating experience. It is a lose-lose because it is probably going to end in a win. I'm talking about the experience. Playing the White Sox is good. Watching your team play the White Sox, at least in the beginning, is bad. And here's why. The Orioles go down two runs in the top of the first, okay? And you can't believe it. The incredulousness. What are we doing? This is the White Sox. You can't be losing to them. It's a lose-lose. If you beat them, well, you're supposed to. And if you lose, the sky is falling. Now, look, did the Orioles win 13-3? Yes. But the nuclear overreaction here is me in the first inning watching the Orioles struggle against the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah. And respectfully, I mean, it's Corbin, not just the Orioles against the White Sox. It's Corbin Burnes against Chris Flexen, who, God bless what Chris Flexen did for the Mariners during his stint there and his esteemed stint in Korea. He has an argument for being the worst starting pitcher in baseball this year, and that you were losing that game for like 20 minutes, and that's a bad feeling, right? Ultimately, the Orioles score a bunch of runs because that's what they should do. The White Sox run differential drops to -301.
Wow. And that's so much.
108th loss of the season. I've already said it before. At this point, I will be astonished if they do not break the record for worst record in Major League history. Again, 120 losses, 96-2 Mets. If they don't lose 120 games, I will be floored. Floored if they don't get to there. Honestly, 125 seems pretty standard. Or expected at this point. They are the worst team I've ever seen. I think they might be the worst team any of us ever see. I hope for baseball's sake that is true, but I do obviously feel for White Sox fans and the guys on the White Sox who are trying their best. But the Orioles should feel fine, and they should continue to beat the White Sox this week and hopefully gain some ground in the American League East.
Any nuclear overreactions out there in Ohio?
Yeah. Mariners just lose out.
You're done? It's done.
I'll say this.
Can you announce it? You got to announce it done.
Well, it's the real reaction. Nuclear reaction is just lose out, tank for a top pick. You know, try to keep restocking this awesome farm system. You know, take some more. You know, listen. What are the Mariners doing well lately? Draft and develop, right? Or at least draft. You know, get some prospects. I'm looking forward to the draft. I want to look forward to the draft even more than I already am. So the Mariners, you know, getting some good lottery luck would be nice. But it's really this.
You went from 10-win lead in the division to lottery luck in 2 months.
This is nuclear overreaction. But really what it is, the genuine part of this, as someone who cares about this team, is I have no interest in them being eliminated on the final weekend for, I believe, what would be the fifth time in the last decade. No interest in that. Like, negative interest in that. So I'd much prefer that they are mathematically toast like 10 days before the end of the season. That would be,
you know what they say, with me. It is better to have never loved at all than to have loved and lost. Correct. Famous saying.
That is how I feel about particularly the Mariners playing in September.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Anyway,
let's move to warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, let's be a little happier. Come on, let's brighten the mood here as we round out this show. A couple options. Where do you want to begin?
Yeah. Anthony Volpe faced Jack Leiter yesterday.
Adorable.
I don't know if you know this, but they're friends from high school. One of my favorite baseball things is when high school teammates face off or play together in the major leagues. The sheer number of high school baseball players across America is staggering. And it's similar to when two siblings make the big leagues. It is both mind-blowingly impossible that the talent can be concentrated in the same household. Yet it also makes sense considering they have the same upbringing and genetics. And the same is true for high schoolers, right? Where not genetics, but you are coming out through the same system, you have the same coaches.
Yeah.
You know, there's a natural selection element to that. But for Anthony Volpe and Jack Leiter, who have really been linked since their high school draft days, to get to face off against each other in the big leagues was very cool. And Volpe took Leiter very close to the wall. And they had one of those cute moments where they laugh at one another. That gave me a warm, fuzzy feeling and made me hope that, you know, one day me and my high school catcher, Michael Paretsky, will one day, you know, shine in the major leagues together or against one another.
Yeah. Volpe, a little bit longer of a homerless streak than Aaron Judge. I think it's not homered since August 3rd. The other good thing about the Volpe Leiter thing is, like, they still look like they're in high school.
Still, yeah, so, both of them baby faced.
So it feels like they flash the picture, and normally it's like, oh, look how long ago. It's like, no, that was like 2 weeks ago.
That is a great transition to our next topic, which is Junior Caminero, who is the oldest looking baseball child we have seen in some time.
He is
21, but he looks 26. Like, if you saw him, you're like, yeah, that's a four-time all-star. He just carries himself with a confidence and a charisma and a presence that is beyond his years. However, there was an interview that went viral over the weekend in which we saw the childlike side of Mr. Caminero. He was sharing a field with Manny Machado for the first time, his childhood hero, which, you know, makes us feel old that Manny Machado could be someone's childhood hero. And he was moved to tears just talking about being next to Manny Machado.
Right. Because it's the reason he wears 13. And for a kid born in 2003, you know, in the Dominican, and you're looking at, I mean, a lot of great players to choose from, obviously, but Machado's not a bad one to pick as someone to, you know, model your game after when you're a kid, and to already be sharing a field with him. And, you know, Machado homers against him one day, Caminero smokes one the next day. We get the jersey swap and everything. I mean, listen, it's easy, but it's delightful. It's fantastic. And the fact that, you know, we have versions of this where it's like, okay, well, it's his favorite player, but he's never going to be anything like him. Well, Junior Caminero, I mean, this guy could be charting a Manny Machado path very realistically. And I think, I'm sure Machado recognized that as well. And I think that is very, very, very cool to see what these two guys can kind of be now and certainly in the future.
Let's do a quick game before we get out of here.
Sure.
In prepping for the show, I often, you know, I read a lot. Go to Fangraphs and The Athletic and Yahoo Sports and MLB.com, you know, just to see what's going around the world of baseball. And on the sidebar for MLB.com, you will often get some goofy things. And that is no exception today. One of the headlines is Dodgers superfan Bryan Cranston's pick for MLB's best player. It's not who you think. Now, Bryan Cranston, obviously most famous for portraying Walter White in Breaking Bad. He's been around baseball quite a bit. You know, he's a Dodgers fan. Jordan, his pick for MLB's best player, it's not who we think. Who do we think it is? Producer Andrew Hartz, could you please go to MLB.com, pull up this article, and have the answer ready for us? Jordan and I are going to take turns trying to guess who Bryan Cranston's favorite baseball player is.
Yeah, so Hartz, just don't put it in the chat. We'll have you put it in the chat when we say so. But let's talk through this, okay? Because is the fact that they're mentioning that he's a Dodgers fan, Is that like a, do we think that that's like a red hair? Is it trying to trick us into thinking he's not picking a Dodger, or is it trying to think into thinking that he is not picking Ohtani?
I think yes. I think the answer is yes to both of those things. Are there any baseball players famous for secretly dealing meth?
Okay. Or you think we're leaning into something like that? I mean, I don't. Like, what would be the answer that would surprise us? I just don't.
Let's go back and forth. Let's go back and forth. Go ahead.
I mean, I guess, like, I would say for Mookie, but like that wouldn't support that. That is who I would think. That would be in the list of who I would think.
Wrong.
Are we in agreement that it's not going to be Ohtani? Because that's like the whole point.
It can't be Ohtani. It can't be Ohtani. Yeah.
Right.
It can't be Ohtani. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not who you think. I think it's Ohtani. No. So it's not Mookie. I think it's like a down ballot Dodger. I'm going to say Kike Hernandez. I'm going to say his favorite Major League Baseball player is Kike Hernandez.
Pick for MLB's best player, not his favorite player.
Oh, it says best?
Yeah, that's the headline.
Oh,
Dodger superfan Bryan Cranston's pick for MLB's best player. Is it Kike? Sorry.
It's not Kike. Best. Okay, so best. Oh,
okay.
Best.
It's not Mookie. Hart said it's not Mookie. It's not Kike. Okay, I'm gonna go.
It's not Ohtani.
I'm gonna say Freddie.
Freddie Freeman, best player.
Not Freddie.
We've been told
not Freddie.
Is it
a Dodger? Wait, Hartz, can you confirm that it's a Dodger?
It can't be a Dodger. We just guessed all the Dodgers.
Not a Dodger. Could it be a D-back? They're playing the D-backs.
MLB's best player. And you have to remember, Bryan Cranston seems like somewhat of a ball knower, but there's no way he's saying Jaron Duran, right?
No,
like,
but is it just as simple as he's saying Judge and it's not a Dodger?
Yeah, that's probably could be Judge. Answer, right? Could be Bobby. Yeah. Bobby Witt Jr. is a fun answer.
No, it's Judge, according to Hunt.
Yeah, it's Judge.
Come on.
That's clickbait. Clickbait.
Yeah, come on. But we clicked.
Clickbait. Ooh, wait, get,
wow. So I guess, does he explain he has to like to defend it?
Dude.
I don't know. That's
a great answer, a great headline.
But hey,
be like, yeah. Orioles superfan Mike Rose pick for MLB's best player. It's not who you think. You click on it and it's like Jorge Mateo or something. Like that's what I want.
This is an interview I'm now seeing that I clicked on it with our dear friend Michael Clare. So I'm going to go read this. Read Bryan Cranston's ball-knowing thoughts. But until tomorrow, we will say goodbye. We will be back with our regular Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbercast. Hopefully you enjoyed this Tuesday weekend recap edition. We'll talk more about Tatis. We'll talk more about the Twins. Talk more about playoff rotations. All that and more on tomorrow's episode. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
I don't know if I gave Bryan Cranston enough credit. Michael Clare asked, to wrap up, who are the other players you love to watch? Cranston. I think Ellie is so fun to watch in Cincinnati and Jazz is fun to watch, but I love Luis Arraez. I love to watch the players that are hungry for that extra base. That's not Luis Arraez. He's very okay
with the one base that he gets.
Yeah, he's totally fine with that base. Yeah. Honestly, Jaron Duran loves that second base.
Yeah. But Ellie and Jazz and Luis Arraez, yeah. That's interesting.
That's a good answer.
All right. Bryan Cranston knows ball. What a surprise. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz for producing and providing us with that very boring answer for Bryan Cranston. And we'll be back tomorrow with another episode of Baseball Barbercast.
Bryan Cranston can email us at baseball.